Once again, we have some great readings full of rich spiritual lessons. But I'd like to start with today's saints, who are also great teachers about the spiritual life. I'm talking about Saints John Fisher and Thomas More. They take us back to merry old England, as they call it. And we learn it wasn't all that merry, at least not for the Catholics. Being a Catholic in this period and in the generations that followed was a very dangerous thing in England. John Fisher was a bishop, and a very great bishop and scholar. Thomas More was a layman and also a great scholar and accomplished statesman. In fact, he was the highest ranking person in the government under the king, King Henry VIII. So there were many martyrs in England. We know England has a whole history of martyrs, but these two stand out, and that's why they're given their own feast day. They stand out as very prominent citizens, and they were very dedicated Englishmen. They were good servants of the king, as St. Thomas More referred to himself, the king's good servant. But when the king stepped outside the bounds of God's will, John Fisher, Bishop Fisher, and Thomas More would not follow him that far. The king crossed the line. Now, in the king's own mind, if you remember, I mean, he thought of himself as a very faithful Catholic monarch. He didn't think of himself as a rebel. And he was very clear in rejecting the Protestants. He even wrote a book against Luther. This is in the time of the Protestant Reformation. So Luther, Calvin, King Henry wanted nothing to do with them. He was Catholic. And the Pope even awarded the king the title Defender of the Faith. It's one of the little tidbits of English trivia that the reigning monarch is referred to as Defender of the Faith, because that was a title conferred on the English monarchs by the Pope. So they rejected the Pope and kept the title. So it's Defender of the Faith. So anyway, King Henry VIII, he thought of himself as a very faithful Catholic monarch, but he also wanted to have an heir, and his wife, Catherine of Spain, was not providing. So, and he had many, many reasons why he thought Catherine should not be his wife anymore. One of them is that she was the wife of his deceased brother. So it was a marriage of state. That's how that marriage came about. And she was a very devout Catholic herself. But Henry had lots of other things in mind and decided to divorce Catherine so that he could marry someone else. We know it was Anne Boleyn who captured his attention at that time. Anne Boleyn was the second. There were six altogether, if you remember the story of King Henry. He had six wives. Okay, so in order to marry Anne, he had to divorce Catherine. In order to divorce Catherine, he had to have that marriage annulled. And that was the problem. The church did not annul that marriage, did not declare that marriage null. It was a valid marriage, so that's it. Once you have a valid marriage, that's it. Bishop Fisher made a very thorough investigation of the case and said the marriage is valid. Thomas More, as the Chancellor of the realm, highest statesman in the negotiation with Rome and Spain and Italy and the other Catholic states, said, okay, we have to acknowledge that this is a valid marriage. King Henry said, no, it's not. He made a royal decree that it was not a valid marriage, and then he made a royal decree declaring himself the head of the church so that the church would make the right decision, meaning his own decision. This is the beginning of the Anglican Communion, if you know the Anglicans. Anglicans who insist to this day that they are not Protestants. Anglicans consider themselves Catholics. That's how they identify. So anyway, that's the colorful history in which left Thomas More and John Fisher on the wrong side of the law, on the wrong side of the king, and eventually they get martyred. They're great examples then of putting God first. They were very high-ranking men, and they for a while had it made because they were honored by both the church and the state. But when they chose the church and not the state turned against them and had them killed. Okay, so those are the examples, and that's a great story. If you want to know more about it, you can watch the great movie, A Man for All Seasons. It's especially about Thomas More and his friendship with King Henry VIII, which became friendship soured. Anyway, okay, let's turn to the scriptures now. With these two men in mind, men who chose God first, who put first the kingdom of God over the kingdom of man. Let's turn to the passage about Abram here. We're following now the also very colorful story of our father in faith. We very conveniently skipped over his trip to Egypt, where he practically betrayed his own wife in order to save his life. That's not mentioned here, so we won't go into that because it doesn't look Abraham look very good. But anyway, when he was in Egypt, he became a very wealthy man because he had the good graces of the Pharaoh. And when the Pharaoh discovered that Sarai was actually his wife and not his sister, he said, "Get out of here." So he went back to the Promised Land, along with all his camels and sheep and oxen and gold and silver. So the reading we pick up today is Abram's a very rich man, lots of very rich men. They've got lots of livestock, and they can't all remain together. And so Abram, now this is one of his good moments, says to Lot, "I'll let you decide. We're family. We shouldn't be squabbling over money. Just decide where you want to settle, and I'll go somewhere else." Very generous, very trusting in God. Now, the central lesson here, though, is the difference between Abram and Lot, and the difference between their criteria for judging what was the right thing. Lot chooses for himself. The language in Hebrew is he lifted up his eyes. He lifted up his eyes and he saw how beautiful this land around Sodom was. It was beautiful, but it was also in the grip of severe immorality. We talk nowadays about the sexual revolution. Sodom and Gomorrah had their own sexual revolution way back, what was it, 4,000 years ago or whatever it was. So, but Lot chose for himself. Abram lets God choose. God is the one who says, "Lift up your eyes and look about you. I'll be the one to direct you to the land flowing with milk and honey. I'll choose for you if you will trust in me." See the difference? They both get land, they both have a place to live, but one chooses for himself and one lets God make the choice. It's similar to what I was saying yesterday about the difference between the Tower of Babel and the decision of Abram to leave his homeland. The Tower of Babel, that was men making a name for themselves and a tower for themselves so that they would be famous and secure. Abram says, "I'll let God decide." And God says, "Leave your land and your people, and I'll make a name for you myself." It's similar to what we saw yesterday. So here's Lot making a name for himself, choosing for himself, and Abram letting God choose for him. This is also brought out in today's gospel. We have this another section from the Great Sermon on the Mount. Three little lessons, but we can pick out a few ideas from them here. Jesus, first of all, saying, don't give what is holy to dogs or throw your pearls before swine. Meaning, don't let the world become or establish your criteria for judging what is valuable. Because if you do that, you're going to end up taking valuable things and subjecting them to the world. This is what Thomas More and John Fisher would not do. They would not throw their pearls to swine. If the country, if the government, if the culture is going to go downhill, don't go down with it. That's the principle here. If other people want to be swine, well, don't be swine with the swine. Stay out of the mud. I think this verse of the Sermon on the Mount has great relevance to the world of social media. Now, I'm not talking to young people here, but I think most people are somehow connected to the world of social media. And there's a lot of mud in the social media. People are subjecting themselves and their sacred values to something that is really low culture. People put, you know, this TikTok phenomenon, they put images of themselves out for popular review, but they demean themselves in order to do it. They dress up in strange clothes or sexy costumes, or they say silly things or foolish things or even blasphemous things in order to get views. That's throwing your pearls to the swine. Don't do that to yourself, and don't do it to your children. My goodness, sometimes people put videos of their children that are, you know, demeaning. It's really a horrible thing to see. And they might go viral. You might even make money. But at what cost? If you want to post pictures of your cats or whatever, put cats on rocking chairs or whatever you want to do, that's fine. They're not pearls. But don't do that to yourself, or don't do that to your children. Don't let your human dignity, this is a principle, I'm not saying it just to you, but it's a principle. Don't let human dignity, which is sacred, get subjected to the demeaning standards of the world. Okay. And as I say, Thomas More and John Fisher, there was a line they would not cross, because that was to throw what is holy to dogs. There are criteria that are given to us in our faith that we should not violate. Let's get down to the end of the gospel where Jesus speaks about the narrow gate and the wide gate. I think it also applies very well to our situation in modern culture. It's easy to think that the best way to go is the way everybody else is going. It's a lot more acceptable, it's not so costly, it's a lot easier. But the broad road and wide gate lead to destruction. That's the warning Jesus gives. Don't just follow the crowd, because the crowd is going in the wrong direction. It's not easy to stand for the truth when everybody is falling into error. My goodness, St. John Fisher is a great example. He was the only bishop in England at that time who defended the faith, the only one. Talk about narrow gate. I mean, my goodness, imagine the social pressure on him. His own friends, his own colleagues, everybody thought he was wrong. We live in times when bishops are sometimes in public dispute. This is clear in the Philippines. Bishops who have different opinions about how the government should or shouldn't behave. But there's not just one against all. It's just camps, kind of a faction. I certainly see it in the United States as well, that, you know, the pro-government, anti-government positions. Well, there's a lot of political maneuvering going on there. But when there's only one, he stands out, and that's John Fisher, a real hero. He put this gospel, he put flesh on this word. He entered through the narrow gate. He traveled a very narrow path. No one joined him. Thomas More too. Okay, there are two examples. But for our sake, we're being taught here that the way to life is costly. It is narrow. That's why sometimes people reject the way of faith, because they don't want to be narrowed down. They don't want to lose their what they think is losing their freedom. The question is not about how much freedom or how many roads and how many paths we can take. The question is, which road leads to life? And if that's the road that leads to life, it doesn't matter how many other paths there are or how good they look. They lead to destruction. So this is a negative way of saying something very positive. Don't go that way, don't go that way, don't go that way, don't go that way, don't go that way. Why are you being so negative? Because there's only one path that leads to life, and that's the path of God's will. Do the will of God. Do the will of God. Okay. So with the example of John Fisher and Thomas More, and the example of Abram, who becomes Abraham, our father in faith, let us apply these principles to our own circumstances today, in our use of social media, in our living and practicing of our faith, in our interactions with our loved ones. Let us put God first. Choose first the kingdom of God. Everything else will fall into place.